TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Bill Moyers, Politics Today is Money Laundering and the Trafficking of Power and Policy. And Bill Moyers added, when he gave this speech, that's fewer than 6 degrees of separation from the spirit and tactics of Tony Soprano. Bill Moyers, elder, intellectual, journalist, and public broadcaster for 4 decades, has known politics more intimately than most of his media colleagues. He was an organizing founder and deputy director of the Peace Corps, special assistant and then press secretary to President Lyndon Johnson, and played a key role in organizing and supervising the 1964 Great Society Legislative Task Forces. He was publisher of Newsday before beginning his broadcast career in 1971. He's acclaimed as one of America's most respected journalists. Some of the programs and films Moyers is famous for are Bill Moyers Journal, The Power of Myth series, The Secret Government, The Constitution in Crisis, and Now with Bill Moyers. He was associated with CBS, NBC, and MSNBC as editor, correspondent, senior analyst, and commentator. Bill Moyers delivered the keynote address at Public Citizen's 40th anniversary celebration in October 2011. Public Citizen was co-founded by Ralph Nader. Their motto is Defending Democracy, Resisting Corporate Power. And Public Citizen has done this in the areas of automobile safety, access to health and justice, international trade, climate, energy, and financial reform. Jim Hightower, Public Citizen board member, the only board this passionate and outspoken broadcaster serves on, had this to say about Bill Moyers.
An extra special treat for me to be with the most eloquent, most insistent, most populist voice, and most intellectual voice in America, my fellow Texan Bill Moyers, out of Marshall, Texas. You know, Oscar Wilde said, be yourself. Everyone else is already taken. And I don't think you can get more yourself than Bill Moyers has done.
Thank you. I'm very honored to share this occasion with you. No American since Thomas Paine has invested the office of public citizen with the indispensability, the influence, the independence, and with greater moral integrity or intellectual rigor than Ralph Nader. He had the first word 40 years ago, and he will have the last word tonight. I do want to say quickly that no one beyond your collegial inner circle appreciates more than I do what you have stood for over these 40 years, or been more aware of the battles you have fought, the victories you have won, and the passion for democracy that still courses through your veins. The great progressive of a century ago, Robert La Follette of Wisconsin, a Republican, by the way, believed that democracy is a life and involves a constant struggle. Democracy has been your life for 4 decades now, and would have been even more imperiled today if you had not stayed the course. I began my public journalism the year you began your public advocacy in 1971. Our paths paralleled and often crossed. Over these 40 years, journalism for me has been a continuing course in adult education, And I came early on to consider the work you do as part of the curriculum, an open seminar on how government works and who it works for. Your muckraking investigations into money and politics, corporate behavior, lobbying, regulatory oversight, public health and safety, openness in government, and consumer protection, among others, are models of accuracy and integrity, equaled only by the work of two men to whom I look up to, Morton Mintz and Cy Hirsch, who are here tonight. Your reports drive home to journalists that while it is important to cover the news, it is more important to uncover the news. One of my mentors at the university, one of my mentors at the University of Texas told our class, news is what people want to keep hidden. Everything else is publicity. And when a student asked the journalist and historian Richard Reeves for his definition of real news, he answered, the news you and I need to keep our freedoms. You have reportedly pointed us journalists to that news. And when the watchdogs of the press fell silent or were muzzled, your growls told us something was up. So I'm here as both a citizen and a journalist to thank you for all you have done, to salute you for keeping the faith, and to implore you to fight on during this crisis of hope that now grips our country. The great American experience in creating a different future together, this voluntary union for the common good, has been flummoxed by a growing sense of political impotence. What the historian Lawrence Goodwin has described as a mass resignation of people who believe the dogma of democracy on a superficial level, but who no longer believe it privately. There has been, he writes, a decline in what people think they have a political right to aspire to, a decline of individual self-respect on the part of millions of people. You can understand why that is. We hold elections knowing they are unlikely to produce the policies favored by a majority of Americans. We speak, we write, we advocate, and those in power, Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives, turn deaf ears and blind eyes to our deepest aspirations. We petition, we plead, we even pray, yet the earth that is our commons and should be passed on in good condition to coming generations continues to be despoiled. We invoke the strain in our national DNA that attests to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as the produce of political equality. Yet private wealth multiplies even as public goods are beggared. And the property qualifications for federal office that the framers of the Constitution expressly feared as an unseemly veneration of wealth are now openly in force. And the common denominator of public office, including for our judges, is a common deference to cash. So, if belief in the dogma of democracy seems only skin deep, there are reasons for it. During the Great Prairie Revolt that swept the plains a century after the Constitution was ratified, the populist orator Mary Elizabeth Lease exclaimed, "Wall Street owns the country. Our laws are the output of a system which clothes rascals in robes and honesty in rags. The parties lie to us, and the political speakers mislead us, because," she said, "money rules." That was 1890. And those agrarian populace were boiling over with anger that the corporations, banks, and government were conniving to deprive everyday people of their livelihood. They should see us now. John Boehner calls on the bankers, holds out his cup, and offers them total obeisance from the House majority if only they will fill it. That's now the norm. And they get away with it. Barack Obama criticizes bankers as fat cats, then invites them to dine at a pricey New York restaurant where the tasting menu runs to $195 a person. And that's the norm. And they get away with it. As we speak, the president has raised more money from banks, hedge funds, and private equity managers than any Republican candidate, including Mitt Romney. Let's name it for what it is: democratic deviancy defined downward. Politics today, and there are honorable men and women in it, but politics today is little more than money laundering in the trafficking of power and policy, fewer than 6 degrees of separation from the spirit and tactics of Tony Soprano. Why New York's Zuccotti Park is occupied is no mystery. Reporters keep scratching their heads and asking, why are you here? But it's as clear as the crash of 2008. They are occupying Wall Street because Wall Street has occupied America. I relish the sign a woman was carrying at a fraternal march in Iowa the other day, one of those Occupy that has grown up around the country. It read, I can't afford to buy a politician, so I bought this sign. I'm going to jump several pages over to connect that to what you have worked so hard on and I've been trying to report on. And that is the success of the plutocrats in ratifying with the Supreme Court their rule in its notorious Citizens United decision last year. Rarely have so few imposed such damage on so many. When 5 pro-corporate conservative judges gave artificial entities the same rights of free speech as living, breathing human beings, they told our corporate sovereigns, the sky's the limit in pouring your money into political campaigns. And the Roberts Court today embodies the legacy of pro-corporate bias in justices determined to prevent democracy from acting as a brake on excessive greed and power in the private sector. Let me be clear, wealth acquired under capitalism is in of itself no enemy of democracy, but wealth with political power, the power to shake off opportunities for others to rise, is a proven danger. Thomas Jefferson had hoped that we shall crush in its birth the aristocracy of our moneyed corporations, which dare already to challenge the government to a trial of strength and to bid defiance to the laws of our country. James Madison feared that the spirit of speculation would lead to a government operating by corrupt influence, substituting the motive of private interest in place of public duty. Madison and Jefferson didn't live to see reactionary justices fulfill their worst fears. In 1886, the conservative court conferred the divine gift of life on the Southern Pacific Railroad. Never mind that the 14th Amendment declaring that no person should be deprived of life, liberty, or the pursuit of happiness without due process was enacted to protect the rights of freed slaves. the court decided to give the same rights of personhood to corporations that possessed neither a body to be kicked nor a soul to be damned. And for over half a century, the court would act as a guardian of privilege. It gutted the Sherman Antitrust Act by finding a loophole for a sugar trust. It killed a New York state law limiting working hours, likewise a ban against child labor. It wiped out a law that set minimum wages for women, and on decision after decision aimed at laws promoting the general welfare. The Roberts Court has picked up the mantle. Money first, the public second, if at all. The ink was hardly dry on the United Citizens' decision when the Chamber of Commerce, which occupies the very spot on which Daniel Webster once lived and sold diplomatic offices for cash and took bribes to cover his debts, his wine, his mistresses, and his boats, is right at home there at 1615 A Street. The Chamber of Commerce organized a covertly funded front and rained drones packed with cash into the 2010 campaigns. According to Ellen Miller's Sunlight Foundation, corporate groups spent $126 million in the fall of 2010 while hiding the identities of the donors. Another corporate cover group, the American Action Network, spent over $26 million of undisclosed corporate money in just 6 Senate races and 28 House elections. And Karl Rove's Crossroads GPS seized on Citizens United to raise and spend at least $27 million that NBC News said came from a small circle of extremely wealthy Wall Street hedge fund and private equity moguls, all determined to water down financial reforms designed to prevent another collapse of the financial system. Jim Hightower has said it well. Today's proponents of corporate plutocracy have simply elevated money itself above votes, establishing cold, hard cash as the real coin of political power. So it's no wonder to me as a journalist or a citizen that so many Americans have felt that sense of political impotence that Lawrence Goodman described as the mass resignation of people who believe in the dogma of democracy at the superficial level, but whose hearts no longer burn with the conviction that they are part of the deal. And I will tell you that against such odds, discouragement comes easily. But if the generations before us had given up, slaves would still be waiting on these tables. Women would still be turned away from the voting booth on election days. And workers would still be committing a crime if they organized. So, don't ever, as Ralph said, don't ever count the people out. During the last quarter of the 19th century, the Industrial Revolution created fantastic wealth at the top and excruciating misery at the bottom. Embattled citizens rose up and fought back. Into their hearts, wrote the progressive journalist from Kansas, William Allen White, had come a sense that their civilization needed recasting, that their government had fallen into the hands of self-seekers, that a new relation should be established between the haves and the have-nots. Not content to wring their hands and cry, woe is us, everyday citizens researched the issues, organized to educate their neighbors, held rallies, made speeches, petitioned and canvassed and marched and marched and marched again. They plowed the field and planted the seeds, sometimes in blood-soaked soil, that 20th century leaders would then use to restore the general welfare as a pillar of American democracy. They laid down the markers of a civilized society, legally ordained minimum wages, child labor laws, workman's safety and compensation laws, pure foods and safe drugs, Social Security, Medicare, and rules that promote competitive markets over monopolies and cartels. They showed us that democracy doesn't begin at the top. It begins at the bottom when flesh and blood human beings rekindle the patriot's dream. The patriot's dream? Arlo Guthrie, remember? It's the Star-Spangled Banner of Zuccotti Park. And in every public place I've seen where Americans long for justice, it's the anthem of public citizen. Living now, here but for fortune placed by fate's mysterious schemes, who'd believe that we're the ones asked to rekindle the patriot dreams? Arise, sweet destiny, time runs short. All of your patience has heard their retort. Hear us now, for alone we can't seem to rekindle the patriot's dream. Can you hear the words being whispered? All along the American stream, tyrants freed, the just imprisoned, try to rekindle the patriot's dream. Ah, but perhaps too much is being asked of too few. You and your children, with nothing to do, hear us now, for alone we can't rekindle the patriot dreams. Who, in these cynical times, when democracy is on the ropes and the great power of wealth concentration pounds and pounds and pounds the American body politic, who still believes such a radical thing? Look around.
Living now, here but for fortune, placed by fate's mysterious schemes, who'd believe that we're the ones asked to try to rekindle the patriot's dreams? Arise, sweet destiny, time runs short. All of your patience has heard their retort. Hear us now, for alone we can't seem to try to rekindle the patriot's dreams. Can you hear the words being whispered? All along the tyrants free, the just are imprisoned. Try to rekindle the patriot's dreams. Ah, but perhaps too much is being asked of too few. your children with nothing to do. Hear us now, for alone we can't seem to try to rekindle the patriot's dreams.
Arlo Guthrie with The Patriot's Dream, remembered in a speech by Bill Moyers at the 40th anniversary celebration of Ralph Nader's Public Citizen in October 2011. Moyers said that politics today is money laundering and the trafficking of power. Bill Moyers is widely acclaimed as one of America's most respected journalists. He once worked in the Johnson administration and became a broadcaster in 1971. Although most famous for his large interview series and documentaries for public broadcasting, he has also held positions of editor, commentator, and senior analyst for commercial networks such as CBS and NBC. Moyers became fond of Arlo Guthrie's song Patriot's Dream several years ago and believes that it gives us hope for a renewal from the bottom up. Arlo Guthrie was the fifth child of Woody Guthrie, the famous folk singer and songwriter. Arlo's best-known songs are The City of New Orleans, Coming into Los Angeles, and Alice's Restaurant. Arlo Guthrie is still performing and outspoken like his late dad. His plan to fix the world is simple as far as the U.S. is concerned. He's for a massive rebuilding of infrastructure. He says he supports every effort at localization to end dependence on companies like Monsanto and Walmart. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. TUC Radio has moved to Northern California. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. You can get information on how to order a CD of Bill Moyers' Politics Today is Money Laundering and the Trafficking of Power by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call. Thank you.